prompts and documents stored within Queen's Domain. What is your stance on the university's adoption of AI, and what steps would you take to protect student data privacy?
Yeah, actually, this is a very good question. In my experience within the Commission of External Affairs, I got the chance to author the artificial intelligence paper for our provincial lobby organization, which is now currently going to be reviewed at this upcoming Winter General Assembly. In that, we actually wrote, I had the sections around responding to the legislation of the Ontario government right now around the responsible investment or the responsible use of artificial intelligence within provincial bodies, including public institutions. I think, firstly, making sure that we're looking at that full policy and its use and seeing how it's compliant with the provincial regulations, but also making sure to critique that policy in the same way we've critiqued the regulations. There's oftentimes common critiques and concerns around things like environmental sustainability, the use of the water, and the impacts of use of AI, but also the impacts on our local economy here at Queen's. How is this impacting the professors and the faculty and the jobs that would be used to be doing those admin tasks? I think also making sure to balance it with that there is a role for AI in the future of technology, and especially within research capabilities, but making sure within our operations that we're being very careful and strategic and also very thorough in our research to make sure that security data, storage of information, and the cost of AI to our environment and our ethical principles is not too high and is actually mitigated. Additionally, with regards to the AI stance, I think for professors, I would be open to meeting with CUFA and their faculty associations to see what their stance is and see where the students' general opinion by doing student research and consultation can be better see where the alignment is and where there's conflict between the student opinion, the professors, and the administration, and how to best go about advocating that in a strategic way for students. Additionally, for the AI on the provincial end, I think it still is meaning to work with the VPUA and the Commissioner of External Affairs to also coordinate that cross-messaging and make sure it's consistent of what we're advocating and lobbying to the provincial and federal government and our municipal government, but also, of course, the university, most importantly. For artificial intelligence, I would finish off is that I do think there is a concern of an accelerated embracing of artificial intelligence with, as you mentioned, security data measures possibly being a bit too lenient and also not secure enough. We have a concern, obviously, well, I know from certain student consultations, is that, as we've seen, oftentimes Queen's professors and the departments can't actually maintain consistency across their own learning softwares, like OnQ. So I would be concerned with their ability to enforce and apply consistent policies and outcomes and processes across all the professors in the university for an AI use as well. With that as well, I wouldn't say the university is embracing quantum computing within all their classes as well. So I think there needs to be a reshifting and understanding from a financial end if the university is investing into AI. That's also another concern for students as to make sure there's not an AI bubble forming and that we're working with the investment managers of both the AMS, which is something that we've already done at the board level, but also advocating to the university to make sure we're cautious about it as that is still made with student dollars. And that is all.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Alex, you have the floor. Queen's has recently developed its own artificial intelligence interface, LibreChat. The university notes that it can be used by staff and instructors to support and accelerate administrative tasks for uses in teaching, learning, and research, with all prompts and documents stored within Queen's Domain. What is your stance on the university's adoption of AI, and what steps would you take to protect student data privacy?
I want to thank you for that question. I think my stance on the university's integration of AI is they shouldn't be moving too fast. Obviously, they developed their own large language model to be able to assist them with the creation of LibreChat, which I think is important. The university does have their own, so we're not just sending off student data and student and professor syllabuses and research and things like that off to OpenAI or Oracle or other AI companies here in North America and across the world. I think, though, that one thing that they do need to do is not jump too far ahead, really understanding how professors are going to be able to use AI. I've talked to multiple of my professors, and they didn't even know LibreChat was a thing until it got announced in the Gazette, just like most students. So that's one thing. They really do need to be training their professors and their staff on how to utilize AI effectively and how Queen's can do that, sort of working with the AMS or even the Faculty Association to create policies and training guides for not only students, but professors on how to use AI effectively. It's something that's not going away in our world, and we need to understand how to use it effectively and not be plagiarizing ourselves and not accidentally just saying false information that will sometimes happen with large language models like ChatGPT and Gemini and Perplexity AI as some in, just some examples of those. To answer that second point, would I advocate for the protection of student data? I really do think that openness and transparency from the university on how they're storing that data is important. I don't really know how OpenAI stores its data or anything like that, and I don't think they're going to tell us how they do that. But one thing the university can do is say, this is exactly what we're doing with the data, this is how we're storing it, and this is how we're protecting your data, to make sure that students' work isn't being just sent off to random websites online so people can buy them to purchase for things and just say, oh, well, I wrote it, it's fine, it's whatever, let it be what it is. But then also professors having their data on there and those administrative things, making sure that students don't have access to other students' information as well is super important. If they're going to be doing admin things like grading or proofreading work or AI checking work as well, I think it's super important that students understand that they aren't going to be, like, other students aren't going to be able to look at their work or know exactly how they're working and things like that. So students still remain autonomous while submitting work as well. I think that's super important. And lastly, I don't think the university should go all in, say everything is done by AI now, we're going to get rid of TAs. I think that's not beneficial to students as well. I think that my most favorite experiences in all of my classes has been interacting with my TAs. They've been able to give me hints on exams, been able to tell me exactly where I'm going wrong with problems, so I'm able to adjust my learning and make sure that I'm able to do that. If the university decides we're just going to move to AI, I think that's going to really negatively affect the outcomes of students here and the student experience here on campus.
Amazing. Thank you for that answer. All right, Alex, this question is for you. What is one university policy or structure at Queen's that you believe most needs reform? And what realistic leverage do you think the AMS has to address it effectively?
That's a really good question. And it's a very broad question, too. I think that there's multiple ways I could go about answering this question, but I'm going to answer it with the one that I think I have the most experience on, and that is orientation. I think the university's desire for orientation to be split up across two weekends is a great idea for students transitioning to school, but it also is hindering them. We see, as an orientation coordinator, we saw less and less turnout to events on the second weekend because students were already dealing with assignments. They were already working on homework problems. They felt like they were already swamped with five classes coming from high school taking four, that they just couldn't handle the stress and coursework so that they couldn't enjoy the events that they purchased a ticket to attend. So I think that changing that back to a week-long structure, we have an awesome opportunity to do it, and I'm sad the university isn't taking it this year. With Labor Day falling when it is this year, we're starting a school, I believe, on September 8th, I believe, which is a week later than we started this year. So we have an extra week of summer, but we could have utilized that time to transition students in to university and start classes on the same date. They've already gone through that orientation period. They've become comfortable at Queen's. They know where to access resources here on campus. So from the first day of class, they know exactly if they're having a problem in day one, they can go to Academic Success Services to create strategies to help develop them that. I think the leverage that we have is we're one of the only universities where the student government does essentially facilitate and run orientation through the AMS and through its faculty societies as well. Utilizing the large amount of faculty society support that we could probably gain from something like adjusting the orientation timeline to better support students and student leaders. I know that the Faculty of Arts and Science had about 300 Gales this year who gave up their second weekend back here in Kingston after starting classes to assist in those transition and orientation activities. We have executive members in third and fourth year who are taking time out of their weekends and taking time out of their summer to come back and plan these events. So making sure that we're not only giving back to those students, but we're also making sure that their studies are important, right? That's what their main thing here to do. They're not here to party or transition students. They're here to learn. So making sure that students feel supported in that is probably the best way I could do that. And leveraging that support to the university to help make that change.
Amazing. Thank you for that answer. Drayden, you have the floor. I'll repeat the question for you. What is one university policy or structure at Queen's that you believe most needs reform? And what realistic leverage do you think the AMS has to address it effectively?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. My initial answer is going to sound unorthodox, but I swear as I explain my answer, it's going to make sense. The policy I would change is the alcohol policy of the university. As much as I do think we are here to learn and everything, I think it's a big inhibitor for fac, socs, and clubs and the AMS to be able to deliver on certain events that are actually going to be engaging, but while we're actually exercising safe consumption of alcohol. So this is from a harm reduction standpoint. I think that the university and the AMS is now lacked the ability to because of the university has an inhibition on alcohol use within events, and specifically prohibits the use of even the tailgate permitting program that the Ontario government had passed, which is now being utilized by student unions across the province on being able to deliver things like the Panda Games. These are really important because what happens is if we don't have sanctioned and insured places with proper safety mechanisms like first aid and walk home and including like core and things like that, then it means that students are forced to have to go into house parties or host house parties or into street parties, or not necessarily forced, but definitely encouraged to over the safe consumption sites or possibilities of engaging in through a safe consumption manner. This also means then police officers are able to fine with AMPs, which is also a very dangerous thing as first-year students who, and typically with a higher probability for international students who are unfamiliar maybe with all of our laws, specifically are unaware on the impacts it has to also your degree and also, of course, your ability to study and work here in Canada. So that is a huge concern. I think largely overall, it helps many different facets of the body from marginalized students, but also making sure we're saving students the hassle and disruption of being fined and also having to go to court to appeal these things, and making sure that the AMS has the ability to deliver safe events that actually allow for fun and engaging activities, and understanding that we are still actual adults and not 14-year-olds. So I think it's trying to advocate to the university to get with the program on the rest of the province's universities and seeing the successes from that, as every other university has shown that the data has helped with reducing the harm caused from unsafe consumption of alcohol in unsanctioned spaces without proper safety services provided. Additionally, I think for our leverage to answer the latter part of the question is the AMS has a great ability with connection to admin. So a big part is trying to make sure you're being strategic with who you're meeting with from the trustees committee that would be responsible for where you'd want to bring this policy to, and making sure that additionally you're gaining outside support and pressure. For example, the city council and community associations like the Sydenham District Association that represents the community around us and where we are living, and also is made up of a lot of Queen's alumni that are quite influential to university, are all in favor of trying to adjust this policy and are actually against what the university is currently avoiding. So I think leveraging this and making sure to properly advocate to the university and show that we do need a change in the alcohol policy for the purpose of student engagement, but also making sure that the alcohol policy is still promoting a safe environment.
Thank you, Drayden. Your next question. Given the Secretariat's central role in elections, judicial matters, and other autonomous governance processes, how should the President exercise oversight of the Internal Affairs Office while preserving its independence and integrity?
Thank you for the question. I think I do have experience with trying to make sure to balance the integrity of autonomy between bodies, both with having to be a commissioner and reporting to the assembly, and also working under the corporate side, of course, and reporting to the board, and then kind of seeing how that balances across bodies like the Journal Advisory Board, the Board of Directors, there are many committees, the committees between the assembly and the directors that the Internal Affairs Office has to look over, and in addition to the assembly itself. I think one of the goals I have is under my transparency goal is to improve the integrity of our student governance. As Edward mentioned earlier, we don't know what we aren't told, and also our integrity of representation heavily relies on the engagement of students in our governance processes, from voting to attending assembly to submitting your concerns to your FACSOC representatives to make sure that the committee work is actually relevant to the student concerns present. So being able to make sure to advance on that and building this Internal Affairs Office resources, looking at its structure, how it's staffed for any historical fun reference is that after the Student Choice Initiative and going into COVID, the Internal Affairs Office is one of, at the time, three different offices that was conglomerated into one, which had a lot more internal staff support, and is where we've seen a decrease in engagement with our governance processes since then. Although we have seen increases year over year, there's only so much efforts without the actual resource support. Additionally, we would see that the Judicial Affairs Office oftentimes delays or has struggles with staffing and things like this. I think oftentimes at the Internal Affairs Office, we need a president that's just there to support and be there for the Secretariat and the Internal Affairs Office team, and making sure that the president trusts whatever the Secretariat is doing and rules on or makes a decision on is in the best interest of the society, whether it's in the best interest of the president themselves. I think understanding and respecting that and making sure to abide by our Constitution, which is our founding document, I would say is definitely really important. Further, I would say for the judicial affairs process, it's also about being okay and open and receptive and proactive with engaging in that process if ever a student raises a concern towards the Department of the AMS DMS, a fellow student, or a FACSOC, et cetera. Making sure those concerns are resolved so that our society policies seem that they are actually enforced, as I believe that if people don't believe these policies are applied to everyone fairly, then people won't follow them or care to report when they are not being complied with. Additionally, I think I will leave off on is the Internal Affairs Office, in regards to respecting its autonomy, is making sure that when we are supporting the Internal Affairs Office, that I'm providing guidance more so in a direction of just being a leader and less so of trying to tell them necessarily how to write their policies and things like that, but relying on the governance process and better supporting them on how I can better get more student feedback for the Internal Affairs Office so that they are producing outcomes that are relevant to students' needs.
Thank you, Drayden. Next up, Alec. Given the Secretariat's central role in elections, judicial matters, and other autonomous process government and other autonomous governance processes, how should the President exercise oversight of the Internal Affairs Office while preserving its independence and integrity?
I've thought a lot about this question because it gets asked every single year. One of the ways that the President can support the Internal Affairs Office is by being their mentor. I'm not here to be the Secretariat. I'm not ready to be the President to tell the Secretariat's office what to do. I'm here to help guide them and help make sure that they're feeling supported. Part of the President's job is being that direct report for the Secretariat and all the other offices, so ensuring that they're able to feel like they have a support system within them, but they're not micromanaging their activities here as well, which is super important for them to be able to do the work that they do. The Internal Affairs and the Civic Affairs team make sure that the AMS keeps running, that our elections are smooth, that if there is a judicial case that does get brought forward, it's answered quickly and it's answered in the most effective way possible. I'm not here to micromanage that office. I'm here to provide support, and maybe the Secretariat doesn't understand why a certain policy was written in a specific way. Within the past few years, being able to help provide that guidance, really looking back to our Constitution and our bylaws, seeing what the President is able to do in those cases will really support that team, making sure that it is semi-autonomous as well, making sure that not only the Secretariat but the rest of the Internal Affairs Office feels like they aren't being micromanaged or the President is watching over their shoulders at any time, really to make sure that those students in those roles feel like they are getting that experiential learning opportunities for running an election or a referendum or learning more about judicial case management and things like that, or even just the internal policy writing process within the AMS. We're not here to micromanage those people. We're here to support and guide them through that process and be a confidant or answer any questions that they may need along the way, which I think is super important. And it also comes back to working with our students and marketing what our our Internal Affairs Office does do, letting students know that this is the process. If you do have a concern with an AMS department or a student here on campus or with the university, navigating those ways and making sure students understand exactly how they play also a role in the Internal Affairs Office is something that other departments across the President's portfolio are able to support them doing as well. So things like marketing campaigns about the election or marketing campaigns about hiring within the Internal Affairs Office, which I know the Internal Affairs Office struggles on hiring year after year since COVID, making sure that students feel like that these roles aren't scary and they're able to actually jump into those roles and get a very positive learning outcome out of them. So that's kind of my kind of jumbled and long answer to that question.
Thank you, Alec. Your next question. The JDUC was reopened to students on May 5th, 2025, after years of development. As AMS physical, structural, digital, cultural, and organizational structures age, what are your plans for modernization within the AMS that aligns with student needs?
That's a really good question. I think that the revitalized JDUC is super important for the AMS to have a physical home here within Queen's University. I think having all of our departments scattered across campus, with the office being in LaSalle and having multiple services run out of the Queen Center or out of Rideau, it's nice to have almost every single service back underneath one roof, with the exception of Common Ground over in the Queen Center, having them there. But having the brew here is so awesome. To update and modernize our online platforms and communication softwares and things like that, I think it's super important to listen to students and figure out exactly how they are consuming media and how they want to interact with the AMS. I think that's super important, not just saying, oh, we're going to do this because this is my idea. It's not the Alex MacArthur Society. It is the Alma Mater Society. So really working with students to figure out exactly how they want to support their communications and understand how their infrastructure works. I think looking at other student unions and how they're a lot younger than ours, with us being the oldest student union here in Canada, I think that gives us some perks, but it also limits us in some ways. I think some of our traditions are awesome and great, but sometimes we just need to update and modernize ourselves, which is super important. So maybe looking at new ways of how our website can be designed so it's more accessible to students here on campus, or making sure that the way we're communicating is in a more modern way instead of long blogs, maybe short 90-second video content, because I know I guarantee I don't want to read something super long after a long day in class. I'd rather just scroll on my phone and watch a TikTok or an Instagram reel or something like that. So looking at ways not to completely reinvent the wheel, but maybe refine it just a little bit for our more modern times. You know, cars are going to be flying one day. Maybe we can fly together.
Thank you, Alex. We now give the floor to Drayden. The JDUC was reopened to students on May 5th, 2025, after years of development. As AMS physical, digital, cultural, and organizational structures age, what are your plans for modernization within the AMS that aligns with student needs?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. I will start off in order there. So I think for physical structure of modernizing for the AMS's need, or for students' needs from the AMS, I would bleed off into beyond just the JDUC there. I think while the JDUC does have a lot of advancements and improvements from it, I think largely Queen's University is a very inaccessible campus, so even trying to get to the JDUC in the first place might actually be inaccessible. Largely where this seems is trying to advance our mission around, again, my main pillar around affordability. I think the reality is we can't see increased engagement and transparency and desire for students to engage with the AMS if they can't actually be able to have the money post rent and food costs to be able to attend events and actually not have to be able to have the free time to be able to do their academic curricular studying, but also enjoy the student experience and fully participate in it. So largely, I would want to be advancing the culture around the AMS in what our priorities are and goals. Additionally, around, you did mention culture advancement, I would say is majorly changing our tone around how we are managing our employees. Again, going back to that proactive communication for that pillar of transparency, I think that's really important to be able to build student trust and transparency in the long run. While also improving engagement. Additionally, would mention for digital, it would also still go around back to that website accessibility, making sure that we are advancing the website to actually be communicative of the entire AMS organization and building upon what the work has been done this year as we've seen advancements of like additions of commission pages and things like that. But I think there's more resources, supports, and avenues that can be linked through the website as a central site. My approach to trying to advance the digital infrastructure of the AMS would be to try to diversify the AMS infrastructure. I think thinking one simple one solution fits all is inappropriate for any of the departments for the AMS, as we have 21,000 students made up of very different backgrounds, but also we have clubs and FacSocs also that rely on some of our digital infrastructure, things like Simply Voting and things like FormStack and also Bounce, which was mentioned earlier. So I think making sure to really look at those and review them and how are they impacting students, clubs, and FacSocs, and how they can better be improved, and making sure if we are missing any digital infrastructure opportunities that we are expanding to those areas to make sure we can kind of reach every student in any corner that they would like. And lastly, around the structural advancements, I think really looking at our executive composition of how many executives we have. The AMS does have the least amount of executives for its student government compared to the rest of Ontario, being as well also on a lower student fee. So I think really looking at how is this impacting senior management composition and executive structure composition to make sure that is it the most productive, or are we just hiring students to go into burnout, which is something we want to avoid. And as the president's office is overseen and correlates a lot with the HR office, I think that'd be something that'd be a priority to me to try to advance.
Perfect. Thank you for that answer. On to our final question. Leadership is often subject to scrutiny. How do you plan to handle criticism, particularly if you make a decision that isn't universally popular with the student body or internally within your AMS team?
Thank you for the question. I think first off is recognizing and honoring that everyone has an entitlement to their own feelings and opinions about any situation. and we as a society of the AMS, but largely just as humans, we will always have disagreements, conversions, and areas where we might not align. I think majorly what I would commit to is making sure that you would know that I always am trying to stick to those three values that I'm trying to hold up to, which is affordability, transparency, and engagement, and also making sure that I would stick with the mission and values of the AMS that are established through the Assembly and its constitution. Largely making sure that any decision that is disagreed upon is making sure to be open to also discuss the rationale behind that and possibly and always be open to redefining my opinion possibly and also seeing if there's any changes in thoughts, especially as gathering more information. To avoid that, though, I think it's important to make sure when you're making tough decisions is do thorough research into the situation, making sure to understand the nuances and the different facets of student intersections that it could affect when it comes to a difficult situation or complex situation. Additionally, it would also be to respect everyone's feelings about not trying to misappropriate how they're feeling and what the situation is. Again, that transparency piece and proactive communication. I think it's important to show our challenges and successes as an organization, as that's what builds trust, not just trying to market necessarily as like a corporation solely on its like products. So I think that would be a major way I would approach it, is just understanding that everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Everyone is rightfully able to express that to the president and to the society through its processes. And the president should always be made available to hear disagreements and actually be wanting to discuss those disagreements. Because if everyone's thinking the same, that means that we're all insane. So we do not want groupthink. I think conversion is very important. Debate and discussion is going to produce the best outcomes. So I think relying on that and making sure to assure students that my rationale in all of my decisions and also making sure I'm keeping in the back of my mind for all my decisions is based in the mandate and the mission and the constitution of the AMS and with my values of affordability, transparency, and engagement.
All right, Alex, same question for you. Leadership is often subject to scrutiny. How do you plan to handle criticism, particularly if you make a decision that isn't universally popular with the student body or internally within your AMS team?
Thank you for that question. I think the first way, if I make a mistake, I'm going to make mistakes. We're all human here. Sometimes we're going to make decisions that when it's first made, students are going to be upset. So I think the first part about doing that is my pillar of transparency. I think part of the thing that's been lacking with transparency is students aren't told why decisions have been made. They're just told that a decision has been made. So really informing students that this is why we had to make that decision and understanding that sometimes you might not agree with that decision right now, but we're trying to make sure that the student experience here is beneficial for all students, not just this year, but 5 to 10 years down the line, I think is super important. I want to understand that everyone is entitled to their own opinion and everyone's opinion is valid. We've all had very different lived experiences here, and we all bring something completely different to the table with completely different perspectives. So I think that's super important to understand as well. How we would go about handling those criticisms is understanding that they're here to make sure, students are here to hold me accountable and the president accountable. So understanding that I may make a decision and I might have to reverse that decision if it's completely outrageous. If I say something like, let's burn down the JDUC and rebuild for insurance money, I probably shouldn't do that. But the students here need to understand that these are things that we should probably not do. And if they're saying, hey, don't do that, probably I should change my mind and fix my opinions on those things. But understanding that, hey, we're all student leaders here. We're all students, and that comes first, right? Understanding that mistakes do happen, but being able to be held accountable and not take that personal. We're here for a job as well as being student leaders as well. So making sure that we're understanding that, hey, at the end of the day, we're going to make mistakes. We're also here to learn from those mistakes as well, I think is super important as well.
Thank you for that, Alex. There will be no burning down of the JDUC. And thank you for answering our questions, candidates. We will now move on to closing statements. Alex, you may give us yours.
Firstly, I want to thank everybody coming out here tonight. I know people have popped in and out throughout the night, and I want to thank you for braving this treacherous weather outside. I remember when I woke up this morning, my roommate sent me the gif of being like, don't swim in the sea, like whatever that one, like you all probably know what I'm talking about. Like, don't take treacherous journeys and stuff like that, just because of how cold and how windy it was this morning. So that's, I want to thank you all for coming out tonight and listening to all four of our campaigns and all of our pillars. I did mention something something earlier that made a bunch of you laugh. That is, it's not going to be the Alex MacArthur Society. It is going to be your alma mater society. I'm not here to lead and just push my own opinions and my own agendas. I'm here to listen, and I'm here to learn from students, and I'm here to lead effectively and as honestly as I can. I'm here to listen to students, and that kind of builds into my three pillars of representation, collaboration, and transparency. Firstly, with representation, I feel like the as part of the president's job, they are here to represent the opinion of students here on campus. So making sure that students feel like they are being represented as appropriately as possible. Going back to students and saying, hey, this is what we've been doing. This is what the AMS is working towards. Do you agree with this? How do you think we can change our approach for this? Or should we completely scrap this and go to something else? So by holding office hours and town halls and multiple questionnaires and plebiscite questions to truly understand how the president's office can best represent those opinions of students is, I think, a necessity here as we move forward here on campus, not just at the end of the year with the outgoing teams sending a questionnaire and then a halfway through the year questionnaire, doing it quarterly, doing it through the summer to ask first year's opinions exactly how they want their AMS to advocate for them as well once they come in here. Again, that'll help boost engagement with the AMS because students' first interactions with the university might be that email saying, hey, fill out this questionnaire for what you want your student government to advocate for. The secondly being in collaboration. I think that every student group here on campus is working towards making Queens a better place for all students. So we shouldn't be fighting against each other and go completely separate ways to end up at the same goal. We should be working together with faculty societies and DSCs and department clubs and things like and discipline clubs and all those other groups that we can work with to make sure that Queens not only is a better place for students but provide better programming for students as well here on campus. And lastly, my last pillar of transparency. I think that students deserve to know exactly how their money is being spent and the decisions that are being made on behalf of them at an AMS level and a university level as well. So that comes down to marketing and explaining exactly why we're making those decisions and why we had to make this decision so we can better make Queens a better place, not just for you right now, but for students down the line as well. I want to thank you all for coming out tonight, and I hope you do all get home safe. Please use walk home if needed. We're all here to make sure we get through this kind of polar vortex together. So yeah, I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Alex. Now, Jordan's closing statements, please.
Perfect. Thank you so much. First, I want to thank everyone for coming today. I also want to make sure to close off with a reminder that I do really hope, if elected, to lead with resilience, passion, and determination for student outcomes, and also a dedication to the AMS's mission, mandate, and student needs. I believe I will be best fit to lead this role, as with my experiences and my abilities to deliver on ambitious goals within previous years and roles at the AMS, but also outside of this organization. And I really hope to earn your vote on the pillars of affordability, transparency, and engagement. I think within affordability, we do need an AMS that is working to save students time and money. Largely, as we've seen from a recent journal article, Queen's two-bedroom rates as of last year have gone up by 28.9% and have now made Kingston the fourth most expensive housing market in Canada. This is why it's important that every table we have with the Board of Trustees, the Senate, and the principal and other admin alike, we are advocating on affordability while also making sure to work with the other executives to implement an organization-wide loyalty and benefits program to better improve student loyalty and incentivize rewards for commonly used student services that oftentimes are already used each day. But also in addition to that, working externally with common frequently used services for students to negotiate MOUs, sponsorship deals, or more importantly, discounts and benefits for every student and or club and FACSOC. With transparency, where proactive communication is seen as building student trust and transparency, I think, again, going back to investing into the Internal Affairs Office is super important to make sure that we can adequately provide our governance processes while also making sure to be proactively communicating and setting that tone with our senior management and AMs and down there. Additionally, for transparency is the website accessibility and making sure we're providing better financial information and strategic plan information like our goal plans and long-term strategic plans and what committee work we're doing at a governance level is available on the website and a bit more transparent, but also being communicated communicated and promoted with marketing offices and internal affairs office collaborations. With engagement, I also do think it's important to build student community through connection. So with that, that will be working and trying to secure with the VPUA candidate a third-party event company so that we can try to provide these larger scale events and improve on harm reduction while advocating to the university on the alcohol policy. Additionally, I want to, before closing off, you can all find my campaign information and learn more about some of the actuals I'm going to be planning on doing at Trey for Prez on Instagram. And I also want to make sure and take a sincere appreciation and opportunity for being allowed to attend this debate. I want to sincerely appreciate Alex for being open to attending this as well and being the opponent in this race. And it's been really great to run for. And also thank the other candidates for their debate question and answers. Additionally, I want to thank the Internal Affairs Office for scheduling this event today and making sure to plan it. And I want to thank every student who's come in and out or online to be able to attend and every student who's going to be voting in this upcoming election. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your answers, Raiden. We'd like to thank all candidates on behalf of civic officers, and I will now hand it to Rachel.
So I'd like to thank all our candidates for coming out today and everyone for assisting our debate night tonight. Anyways, thank you, everyone. Please vote January 28th to January 30th and come to our elections reveal night at the Queen's Pub, 6 p.m. on January 31st to see who your new election candidates will be or executives will be. But everyone, have a great night and get home safe. Thank you so much for coming.
And that's a wrap for the Alma Mater Society's All Candidates Debate. You can watch the full debate on the Alma Mater Society's YouTube page, where you'll see extra footage from the evening, including about a half hour of questions from the audience fielded by executive candidate members. Once again, AMS members are reminded that voting days for candidates and student fees takes place over 3 days on January 28th, 29th, and 30th. Watch your Queen's email for ballots and visit myams.org for more information about candidates, groups, and the elections process. Don't forget to follow the AMS on Instagram at Queens_AMS to stay up to date with the latest in your student government's news and what's happening right now with the AMS elections and referendum. And give the candidates a follow as well to find out more about their campaigns and where to find them on the campaign trail around campus this week. Thanks again for joining us here on CFRC 101.9 FM, proudly supporting Queens student leadership and initiative since 1922. I'm Dinah Jansen.
They say the holy water's watered down, and this town's lost its faith. Our colors will fade eventually, so if our time is running out, day after day, we'll make the mundane our masterpiece. Oh my, my, oh my, my love. I take one look at you, you're taking me out of the ordinary. I want you laying me down to the dead and buried. On the edge of your knife, staying drunk on your ride. The angels up in the clouds are jealous, knowing we found.
Back to you. It's so silly of me to act like I don't need you back. When all I can think about is that since I seen you last, I know I didn't have to walk away. All I had to do was ask for space. I'm telling you, be on your way. When I told you to fall back, so can you come pick up your clothes? I had them folded. Leave me at the door, why is still open? I know it's getting cold out, but it's not frozen. So come pick up your clothes. I had them folded. I'll let your body decide if this is good enough for you. Already folding it for you. Already folding it for you. I'll let your body decide if this is good enough for you. Already folding it for you. Already folding it for you. No matter what you do to switch the story up, I know I made my mark. And I would still choose you through it all. That's the crazy part. Crazy part. I don't need no more empty promises. Promise me that you got it. I don't need roses, just need some flowers from my garden. Can't you go back to how you loved on me when you started? I'll be here begging for you. You should be giving me love all damn day till the day is done. So if you wanna
breaking in. 32 like my pants size, cause them niggas try breaking in. New condo, say your name at the front. You can stay if you want. It's been one of those nights. One of those nights I ain't had in a minute. It's been a minute. Had to pop a shroom to recreate the feeling. But it's never the same as the first time we did it. First time we did it. But I let my guard down for you. Said I'll put my guard down for you. Said I'll be vulnerable. So you can break my heart if you want to. She said, take your time. What's the rush?
Take your time.
From inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram at cfrcprisonradio. The CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay and Frontenac, Joyceville and Pittsburgh, the Sundance Youth Detention Center here in Kingston, Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Messages and song requests will be broadcast once per month on Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM or on the web at cfrc.ca. For 2025, Calls from Home will air on the following dates: April 16th, May 14th, June 11th, July 9th, August 6th, September 3rd, October 1st, October 29th, November 26th, and December 24th. Please send in your message at least one day before the broadcast date. These upcoming show dates, contact info, and additional information is available online at cfrc.ca or on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. We look forward to receiving your messages and sharing them over the airwaves.
On Saturday, February 7th, the Carr Harris Cup returns to CFRC 101.9 FM. Tune in at 7 p.m. to catch the 140th anniversary clash between the Queens Gaels and their crosstown rivals, the RMC Paladins. The Carr Harris Cup is more than just a game. It is a celebration of history, pride, and the Kingston community. And you can catch all the intense action on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Broadcasting 24.